Hey folks, welcome to the Percussion Loft, the podcast from Gombops. This year, we're celebrating our 70th year as the leading percussion manufacturer since 1954. I'm your host, Rich Mangiacaro. Glad you could join us as we give you an inside look into the lives and careers from the world's greatest drummers and percussionists. Also, don't forget to check out our previous episodes too, which can be found wherever you podcast. And make sure you subscribe, share, and hit that like button. We really appreciate your support. We're excited to welcome today percussionist Will Phillips. Originally from Texas, Will has gained a strong reputation here in Los Angeles, performing with a host of great artists, including Latin Grammy nominee Claudio Brandt, will.i.am, Ellis Hall, Jamie Foxx, and many others. Will has appeared on The Voice, American Idol, MTV Brazil, and recently he's touring everywhere as the percussionist for the mega popular American reggae band Stick Figure. Will also is Gombop's inspiration for our bucket shakaday, an instrument fashioned after the Brazilian version called the shakabalde. If you haven't checked out that instrument yet, we're sure you're going to dig it. Will has spent many years in Brazil perfecting that country's style of playing, and he has also assisted us in creating our very lightweight pandeiro, which comes in both 8 and 10 inch sizes. Here is my conversation with Will Phillips. We just heard a piece called Interlude from a band called Orgon, which is featuring today's guest, Will Phillips. And Will's joining us today from just south of Los Angeles. Will, what's happening?
What's up, Rich? How you doing?
Good to see you, bro.
You too.
Man, I love your studio. It's such a cool space.
Thank you. It's the really percussion womb.
Yeah. What do you call it? Percussion womb?
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. Yeah.
I like that.
That's how it feels.
I wish everybody could see this. It's a really cool room that he built, but he's made it very cozy, which is always it's always a beautiful thing when you can walk into your room and be comfortable and
absolutely
and, yeah. So how are
not
you?
Not have to worry about volume too. It's nice.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
Can you basically work there anytime, day or night?
Anytime, any hour. Yeah, it's all good.
Nice.
Yeah.
So how you been?
I've been good. I've been home for a minute. Doing a bunch of in-town gigs, gotten some recording sessions at the house. That's been nice. And yeah, family's good. Everything's good.
So when did you get off the road? Were you working during the holidays or did you get Christmas off?
No. I was off. Oh, yeah, it was Christmas off. I mean, we did go to Mexico in the beginning of December. We went down there and played a festival. It's like a 4-day festival.
Right.
We did 2 gigs there and then brought the family with me to the gigs. And then we went to another resort in Cancun and we stayed for a week pretty much and just kind of hung out and chilled, really. It was nice.
Oh, that's nice. That's always nice when you can do that.
Absolutely. And you know who was playing at the other resort I was at? It was crazy. I didn't see it, but I ran into the manager. It was Usher and Justin Timberlake.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, a private party.
Did you know the guys that were playing with those two artists?
No, I didn't actually.
Yeah.
I didn't know. I just ran into this guy, Larry Toll, as a manager. When I was with The Offspring, he was a manager.
So, oh, okay.
Anyway, I ran into him.
I see.
Yeah.
Nice. Right on, man. Well, listen, for those of you who are meeting Will for the first time, I'm really happy to have you meet Will. He's been a Gombops artist for some time now. And has made a pretty big impact on our company in the time that we've been working together. And we'll get into all that a little while from now. But I want to go back a little bit and kind of just talk a little bit about your early days. Will is originally from Texas. Is it Austin area?
San Antonio, it's that little south.
San Antonio, okay.
Yeah.
And he's been out in Los Angeles for quite some time now. But let's talk a little bit about your early days, Will. I seem to remember something about you come into the music game a little later than in life. When did you start, and how did that all start for you?
All right. So I started playing when I was 21, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
I was a junior in college at University of Texas, and never really thought about honestly playing until then. My friends and I, we'd love to go see this band, Widespread Panic. That was kind of our thing. So we, you know, on the weekends or whenever we could, we traveled to different places to go watch them. And there's a percussionist in Widespread Panic named Sonny Ortiz, been with them forever. Anyhow, he always just kind of, you know, got my attention. All the toys, the colors, like, it was all very impressive to me. So that's kind of what I latched on to. And I'll never forget, we were driving back from one of those shows back to Austin, and my buddy, he's a guitar player, and he was like, "Hey man, do you want to, you know, play the bongos with me at a gig?" And I was like, "A what? Yeah, all right, what's a gig?" And he's like, "Well, it's like a smaller version of what Panic does." I'm like, "All right." So anyway, I'll never forget, I played the bongos and I was so nervous. I think I had 5 beers. I was so nervous. So nervous. There's 200 people there and I've never played an instrument. But, you know, I guess I had natural rhythm. So the feedback I got was very positive and it kept me going. Like, I never stopped from that night, actually.
Well, that's pretty interesting though, Will, because, you know, as you well know, a lot of people that we speak to and have in our circle of family players that we're friends with and everything, everybody starts pretty young, right? And yeah. For you to start at that age, first of all, many of us at that age have already been professional for a long time, but you must have had a natural talent. You must have, because for you to just like pick it up at 20 years old or 21 years old and then immediately be able to have something going, you got to have some kind of a past life thing with this. I don't know. It's because you started, you played bongos that night. It was the first time you've done that. Had you, yep. I mean, had you, you've never had any other musical experience?
Never. I had to like borrow bongos from the guy's brother that I was playing with. And yeah, okay. Never.
Well, that's really interesting. Well, what was your interest in high school? What were you doing in high school?
In high school?
Yeah, before college, what were you into?
I was getting in trouble. I was, you know, I was playing basketball with the boys after school. Like, yeah, sports, really. Playing basketball and football. And then, yeah, that was it. There's zero music in high school.
That's really interesting. So you were watching and listening and being a music fan. And then you kind of gravitated towards, when you saw Widespread Panic and you saw and watched the percussionist, you kind of gravitated that way, it seems like.
I gravitated that way. And then, you know, there was one night at one show. It was really, really special to me. It's they played in New Orleans. I forget where. It doesn't really matter. But the opening band was a band called Los Hombres Calientes. And, you know, remember, I had no idea about music at all. So I didn't know who this band was, what style. But Bill Summers is the leader of this band.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. So he comes out in the front of the stage and he does a Shake-A-Day solo.
Hang on a second.
And I will.
For those of you who don't know who Bill Summers is, he famous for playing for Herbie Hancock for a long time in the Headhunters. Go ahead.
Yes. So Bill comes out and he does a Shake-A-Day solo. And I don't know what to say. Like, I just, it was crazy. I just started crying, like bawling, like as if, I mean, bawling, like as if like your dog or something tragic had passed, like that kind of crying. And, you know, the friends around me were like, "Dude, take some drugs. What's, are you good?" And I couldn't even talk. I didn't know what to say. But I will say, it was that night I said, "This is what I'm going to do with my life."
Oh, wow.
It was that powerful, that moment.
That's so interesting.
Yeah. And I've got to tell Bill that and share that with him. And it's pretty special, actually.
I was just going to ask you if you had met him and told him that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. I met him and told him. He actually asked to take some pandero lessons.
How's that for a complete turnaround?
Crazy. Really wild. Yeah. Yeah.
Where did you see Bill play?
Well, I saw him play. He was opening the show for Widespread Panic.
Oh, okay.
Like I was doing another one of those panic adventures with my friends,
Oh, okay.
and they were their opening band.
So we're going to talk about Widespread Panic a little later, I think, because you have some more experience with them that was more recent.
Yeah, another full circle moment in my life.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, we'll get to that. So you played bongos at this show, 200 people, never done it before. What happened after that? What was the next thing?
The next step was I bought congas, I bought bongos, and I was ready. I was in my room, probably smoking some weed or something, jamming, not knowing what I'm doing, but I know it was fun. And so me and the guy who asked me to play, we just started like playing shows around Austin, really, just me and him. Acoustic guitar, congas and bongos, and then we put together a band, and we had a gig every Thursday night at the Iron Cactus on 6th Street in Austin. And that's kind of what kept me going through college as far as playing goes. And it was actually a lot of fun.
So when you were in college at that point, then did you start doing any music classes or private lessons or anything?
No, what I did is I got my degree in business and marketing, communications.
Right.
And so I didn't do any classes in college, but during the summer times, I had 2 summers when I started, I went to Berkeley and I went to the what is it called? Berkeley Summer Program, maybe. I
Right.
forget what it's called. It's like a 6-week course.
Mm-hmm.
I'll never forget. I go there and they have like auditions. I'm like, what the hell is an audition? All right. So I go totally green. But I knew how to play timbal, and I think I had a good feel because I would go in there, like crank the music over the speakers, and they're like, "All right, play." It was Aggie Castrillo and some of the staff. So I played the timbal, what I knew how to do, and then they put me in Giovanni Hidalgo's class.
Oh.
Dude, it was way above my level,
Yeah.
way above, and I guess they thought I was better because I had good feel. They didn't ask me to solo or anything. I just went there and played timbal. Anyway, they put me in Giovanni's class, and that was intense. I didn't understand anything. I
Yeah.
mean, nothing. And it was great. But one moment that did happen is I ran into Giovanni while I was there, but somewhere on the street, And he's kind of said. What he said, he goes, "Will, I know that you're struggling in this class, but you have the best feel out of anybody in the class."
Wow.
And I was like, and I didn't even really know what that meant. He
Yeah.
actually had to explain what it meant. And I was like, "Oh, damn. All right, cool. I've never forgot that." And that was a long time ago.
Wow, what a nice way to get a little stamp at that point.
Absolutely.
Then
Absolutely.
did you take any lessons with him or anything?
Well, it was literally 5 days a week with him.
Oh, okay.
So there was, I don't remember if it was like 5 or 10 people in the class, but it was basically group lessons for, Monday through Friday.
Wow, for how long did that last?
6 weeks.
Oh, well, that's a great way to start. Did you notice like, oh, things are changing now?
Yeah, I mean, I was overwhelmed, honestly. I mean,
Yeah.
there's like when I like I, why I got placed in that class, I don't know. I think, like I said, I had good feel and they thought I was better than I was. I don't know. Because the guys in the class were already like, doing crazy great rudiments on the congas and all that. And so I just felt a bit overwhelmed, honestly.
Right. But no, I seem to remember reading something about, and what, this must have come into your life after you did those summer programs out here in LA. Now, did you come to LA after that summer?
Yeah, well, after I graduated college,
Yeah.
I was looking at going to Berkeley. Aggie was trying to get me to go to Berkeley, actually. He was encouraging me to. But I just graduated from a 4-year university. I didn't want to go to school for that long again,
Right.
really. And so I found, which I'm so grateful, I found a school called Los Angeles Music Academy in
Right.
Pasadena.
Right.
And anyhow, that's where I went. And it turned out to be great because it was their first year of having a percussion program. So I was the only hand percussionist in the entire school.
So,
So my.
and I just read that about you, and knowing you as long as I've known you, I did not know that you were studying with Jerry Steinholz until I read that.
He was a huge help for me. I mean, huge.
Tell me about that, because you know I actually studied with Jerry. He was a dear friend, but I didn't know you were one of his students. Tell me how that all began.
Well, I assume Lama probably hired him to run the percussion program. I didn't even know he was. I didn't know anything. I just wanted to study percussion. So I went there, and I knew it was a year long. So I went there. Jerry was the guy, and also Billy Holting as well.
Okay.
And Pete Corpola.
Okay.
And anyway, but Jerry was instrumental for me because he was just, very encouraging and helpful. And that's where I really grew, Rich. And I mean, I grew a lot. So much that, I think I was 5 or 6 months into this program, and Jerry's like, dude, we got to get Machito Sanchez or someone to come here. Like, you're kind of dancing out of what I can show you anymore. I was like, wow, all right. And like I said, being the only percussionist, I had every ensemble, EW, I had everything every other instrument had, but privately, because there was nobody there.
What year was that?
Ooh, 2003, I believe.
Okay.
Yeah, 2003, I think.
All right.
But it was a great program for me. I mean, and I got to play, in every other whatever it's called, every other ensemble. I would play in the drum ones, the bass ones, the guitar ones. And so I just got a ton of playtime there.
So were you studying hand drums with Jerry and then other instruments in the percussion family with Billy and Pete?
Yeah, I was studying congas and timbales with Jerry.
Yep.
And then Billy was teaching me how to apply hand percussion in pop music.
Okay.
And Pete would just come along and kick my ass sometimes, and that's about it.
Yeah. Did you study?
He was hard on me.
Was he?
Yeah, he was, actually.
Well, did Billy work with you at all with any mallet stuff?
No.
Okay.
No, I wasn't into it.
All right.
I just, yeah.
Yeah.
I fell in love with congas, right. And that's really all I wanted to do.
Well, Jerry is pretty instrumental in a lot of guys' careers, a lot of guys. I mean, Billy obviously was one of them.
Yep.
So is Mike Fowl and Kalani.
Oh,
and
Mike was there too.
Was he?
Mike was there, yes. He would show me djembe stuff and congas.
Yep.
And he was there a lot. Sorry, I forgot to mention him. And then the other guy who was there, but not as often, I think it was once a week, if I'm not mistaken, was Randy Gloss.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Randy changed my life, pretty much.
Yeah. Let's talk about Randy.
Let's talk about him. That guy is amazing.
Yeah, he sure is.
Amazing guy, amazing player. At that time, Randy was the one that showed me, the first time to show me Pandero.
Okay.
And, man, talk about just falling in love with an instrument. Wow. I was, immediately hooked. And Randy is a big part of that. Very big part.
Was that kind of the beginning of your, I want to ask you how you got down to Brazil and ended up living there and studying.
That's it.
I'm trying to remember when you told me, was Randy the inspiration for that initial idea to go there? Or I can't remember if it was also a romantic.
No. It was, what it was, is I fell so deep into the pandero, right? Playing it all the time, hard to figure out, And I just got to a point where I needed to do something. So I sold everything I owned and I moved to Rio because I wanted to learn the music.
Did you finish it at Lama?
I did. I finished at Lama.
Okay.
And then I stayed in Pasadena. No, actually I moved down to Hermosa Beach for a bit.
Yep.
And You know how it is. It's tough. I wasn't gigging that much. I was playing some Brazilian stuff like once a week, but that much. Anyway, then I drastically moved away. I thought I was going to give up on music, actually. That's the truth. I moved back to Austin. I got a job doing medical sales.
Okay.
And then I wasn't getting a gig, but God had another plan, I guess. I don't know. I don't know. Like, I played 5 nights a week there and I didn't even try. So I had to look at that and be like, all right, I mean, this seems like the path I'm supposed to do. And yeah, that's what inspired me to move to Brazil.
Oh, so
Was after that.
you were doing medical sales and gigging 5 days a week?
Yeah, I didn't last long in medical sales. I got fired.
Okay. Yeah. That's understandable.
Imagine.
Yeah. And
So
then when you that's when you decided to move to Brazil.
that's when I decided to move to Brazil. Yeah.
Did you have
But I was
any?
playing Brazilian music in Austin,
Oh, okay.
right?
Did
With
you have any?
a buddy from LA moved to Austin to play. And that's where a lot of the gigs were coming from. We were playing all Brazilian music all the time, really.
Did you have any contacts down there?
No.
Did Randy help you know get to know somebody down there?
Oh, in Brazil, you mean?
Yes, in Brazil.
Yes, Randy did. He hooked me up with a school called Maracatu Brazil.
Okay.
And that was really the only contact I had. As far as like finding a place to live and all that, one of the most challenging things I've ever done. I didn't know the language. It
Right.
was hard. It was really hard. Slept on a girl's floor for a while till she kicked me out.
Yeah.
Yep. And then I randomly ran into a woman in Ipanema who spoke English. And her husband had bought an apartment. His husband was from America. He bought an apartment building in Ipanema. And she had one available. So anyway, I lived a block off the beach in Ipanema, and she paid all the bills for me and everything because she knew I didn't speak the language.
Wow.
Yeah, it was pretty sweet. Had a cook and a housekeeper.
Jeez.
It just came with it. It's not like I
Yeah.
sought after that. And so yeah, it was, look, that was one of the most amazing experiences I've ever done. It was living there.
On
One of them, yeah.
that first time you went down, how long did you stay there?
7 months.
Okay.
I ran out of money. I had to come back.
Okay. Back
Yeah.
to Austin?
No, I actually moved here,
Okay.
Los Angeles.
So
I
in
knew
that,
if I moved back to Austin, I wouldn't really be playing any Brazilian music. The only
right.
reason I was playing there is because my buddy that moved from here to there was there.
So
And then he moved back.
talk about your pandeiro playing while you were in Brazil that 7 months. Did you see a change? Did you see a
Oh.
deepening in the interpretation of their feel and all of that stuff? Talk about that.
Yes, that's what changed everything, really, and made me comfortable with Brazilian music. Because in my experience, like I have to anyway, like live the culture,
Yeah.
talk to the people, eat their food, have, drinks with them, hang out, this kind of thing. And it really it changed my confidence, I think, honestly. And with that, my feel and everything started to really come together.
Yeah.
And I had amazing teachers there for Bandeira. Like, I studied with Marco Cezano quite a bit there.
Oh, yeah.
And
Okay.
he was really good for me.
Oh, I
And
bet.
what, yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Well, it's one of the best pandeiro players in the world. You studied with him, so that's, I can,
Yeah.
yeah.
We're still in touch.
Did you have any issues or struggles with how they feel the 16th note, how they that lope that we talk about, or
Yep.
did Randy give you kind of a jump start on that, or how did that go for you? I'm going to ask you that for a reason, but go ahead and answer that, and then I'm going to tell you why I asked that.
Okay. No, I never had any issue with that, honestly. I don't know. I mean, I really didn't. No one ever pointed it out if I did, which is good.
Well,
Good for me.
I think that's interesting though, Will, because you started late. You started 20 or 21 years old. You
Right.
jumped into playing. You had a natural feel for it. Those of us who've been playing since we were very young in America, being around the way the 16th note is felt here, and the way we learn popular music, it's quite different in Brazil. We call it a lope or a skip, kind of a feel, how they interpret this thing. I'll never forget Alex Acuna describing this in a clinic a long time ago when I was younger. He was basically saying how when you roll a ball down a hill or is like American version of a 16th note, you know, a ball, but if you roll you roll an egg down a hill, that's more of the Brazilian interpretation of that feel.
Interesting.
Which, if you visualize that, you can kind of see what you can hear. Yeah. You can hear that skip.
That's cool. Yeah. I've never heard that. I like that.
Yeah, I do too. I've always had a big impression on me, and it's harder, at least for me, and other players that I've talked to, harder for us to kind of latch on to that feel without really kind of having to, and you know, and it's something actually I someday got to start sitting with you and studying with you, because I love pandero too, but it's really a hard instrument, I think. And and that feel, that if you get that feel, it's a big part of the way you play not only pandero but, you know, the Brazilian rhythms, you know. But sounds like you had a head start.
Because you know why that happened, I think, kind of naturally or easier for me, now that I'm thinking about it? It's that guy I'm telling you about that moved down. His name's Daniel Carneiro. He also went to Lama, but he was graduated a year before me. However, he had a gig at a steakhouse, a Brazilian steakhouse, 5 nights a week. And somehow I got called to do that. So I was playing Brazilian music, like, from the get-go, a lot.
Yeah.
And I mean, a lot. And that's what it takes, I think, honestly, is like to engulf yourself in it in order to, you know, establish the feel and the confidence and all that. I don't know another way, actually.
Oh, absolutely. And if you're playing with a cat that's from Brazil, and then, yeah, absolutely. That's very true. It was really great that you had that.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's amazing. I mean, he's a big reason, too, that I got inspired to move there and really get my hands around Brazilian percussion.
Well, you've been down there a lot, but that first time was about 7 months. And then when you came back, you lived, what part of LA? Were you down in the South Bay in the Hermosa Beach area? Or?
Yeah, yep. I've been down here pretty much ever since I left Pasadena.
Yeah.
Or when I moved back from Rio, anyway.
When you got back out here, how did things start to develop for you with people and gigs and all that stuff?
Well, I put together a samba funk band. It's what happened. Me and this guy Daniel I'm telling you about, we put together this band, and we had a gig at a place called The Shore in Hermosa Beach, right by the water, right by the ocean. And it was every Sunday night. It took about 2 months, maybe three, if I remember correctly, to kind of get popping. But once it got popping, Rich, I'm talking like sold out every Sunday night for over 2 years. And so that is really what got my name out anyway in the LA area, was from that gig, because I'd hire, sometimes if my buddy wasn't available, I'd hire Kleber George or Mitchell Long, and they, you know, they would talk and tell guys like Kevin Ricard, Luis Conte, whoever, about me. And that was very helpful for me to establish any type of recognition here in LA.
Okay, so let me ask you a question about that, because, you know, you normally, when we're younger, starting out, much younger than when you started, we all have our influences. And, you know, one of the questions I like to ask is, who are some of your influences? Your influences are later in life. So your influences really early on were Brazilian people, Brazilian players. And
absolutely.
Well, Randy Gloss, of course, and the guys at Lama, like Jerry and Billy and Pete, you know. But you're starting to meet some of the guys that are doing the bigger gigs, Kevin, and talk about some of the first guys you met here like that, the people that we know the big names in our industry.
Cool. Yeah. So these are two I won't forget either. Is there was a jazz club in town called Lava Lee.
Sure.
Remember that spot?
Yep.
So I went there one night with my wife, and Kevin Ricard, he had a band called Samba Guru.
Oh, yeah. I remember.
So I went to go watch them, right? And I'm sitting at the table, and I didn't know anybody there, really. I go, and I'm sitting there, and the singer, Cacho Moraes, she goes, you know, this is a pandero from Brazil. Da-da-da. Can anybody play this pandero? And I didn't say a word. And somehow Kevin knew what I looked like. I don't know how. I should ask him one day. And he goes, I think that guy could. And he pointed at me, And I was like, oh my gosh. So Kachi was like, oh, and she hands me the pandero. They start playing a tune, and that was that. I played pandero on it, and then they were like, okay, stay here. Don't go sit back at the table. So I
Ah.
went behind Kevin's rig, and I pretty much played percussion with him for the evening.
Oh, nice.
That's how we met. It was awesome. It was a
Wow.
great moment. And
Wonderful.
then I subbed for Kevin too in that band.
Okay.
And he's, they did some out of town dates that he couldn't do, so he would call me to sub for him, and that really felt good too. And the way I met, that's how I met Kevin, and the way I met Luis Conte was cool. So, I was new here. You want to study with the best and all that. So I think I Facebooked or MySpace, I don't even know, one of those, Luis, and I asked for a lesson, right? So, all right, cool. So I drive out to his place, which is far, and that lesson turned into an 8, 9 hour hang and jam. Like, we played all day long. And then I think one of the things is, not I think, this is what happened. Like, I was asking about recording, And so he pulls up, some track or something. And he's like, all right. So, like, what would you do on this track, Will? All right. So I picked up two Kashishi and I play Kashishi. And he goes, what? Wait, can we actually record this? Are you cool with that? I was like, what? All right. So I recorded my Kashishi track. And yeah, and then played congas and stuff for, like I said, probably 8 hours, an entire day. And he was like, "Well, what do you want to do here, man? Like, who do you want to play with?" And at that time, there was a singer-songwriter named Colby Calais.
Yeah.
She had this hit that definitely had like cuíca and Brazilian elements within this pop song.
Right.
And I just, when he asked me, I remembered that, and I was like, I wouldn't mind getting a gig with Colby. I mean, that'd be pretty cool. He's got some cool songs, and I could add some Brazilian type stuff to it. And he goes, yeah, all right. Picks up his phone, calls, I don't even remember, the producer or the manager, somebody. And he was like, oh, there's a new guy in town. He's ready. He's ready for the road. He's ready to go. You should call him. Right in front of me. And then he hung up and he goes, well, I just want you to know, that's the first time I've ever done that. And I was like, wow. Well, I'm honored. Thank you. And that's how I met Luis.
Okay.
Was cool.
Did you ever hear from Colby?
Never.
Okay. So,
Never.
all right. So let's talk a little bit about some of the first like bigger gigs that you got in town here. 'Cause I remember reading something about playing on Claudia Brandt's album, but was there stuff leading up to, because wasn't that a Latin Grammy nominated album that you played on?
Yes.
Yeah.
And thank goodness. Thinking back, thank goodness I was so green at the time,
Yeah. Oh,
because
well.
like I didn't really know who I was in the room with, which is a good thing. That was really great. A drummer named Aaron Sterling.
Sure.
I didn't know him at the time,
Okay.
but he was on all these guys, and yeah, that got a Latin Grammy. And I did. So I played a few songs, but one of them I played is like I played a hybrid kit, right? And the hybrid kit thing was brand new to me. They were just trying to think of different drum sounds. And I opened my mouth. And Greco Baratos, he was leading it. And Greco was like, all right, let's try it. And we're talking like a, really nice studio, all the whole nine. And anyway, I just remember Greco going, well, you ever done this? It's like, never. First time, actually. And he's like, damn, I hope you can play to it quick.
Yeah,
I was like, yeah, me too.
me too, right?
And we did it. I mean, I nailed it. I don't know how. I'm telling you, I think I got lucky. I don't know what it was, but I nailed it and it made the record. And let think if I knew what I knew now, like if I was like, I would have made me so nervous knowing Aaron is in the control room listening to me play like a drum set thing, But since I didn't know anybody, I was fine.
Ignorance is bliss back then.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, that's really great. You're on a Grammy winning track with Aaron Sterling.
First time we met him, yeah.
Pretty amazing.
¿Qué nos está pasando? Hace tiempo que te veo fastidiada. Eso mío ya no. te duermes sin decir hasta mañana, que nos está matando. ¿Será que hay alguien que tu amor me anda robando? ¿Por qué te pasas día y noche suspirando?
So what happened after that?
After Claudia?
Yeah.
What did happen? God, that's so long ago. It's hard to remember like the sequence of events, really.
Because you know you have a bunch of people that you've worked with over the years. I think you know before what you're doing these days, which is you know. We'll get to that in a minute, but I know that you did some work with Will.i.am and
yeah,
you played.
You're just asking. Okay, I see. Like, who
some
else
of the
I played
artists
with
you played
after
with,
Claudia?
But, yeah,
got it.
And also, I want to talk to you a little bit about you know your experience on the American Music Awards and American Idol and The Voice and all that.
Yep. Yeah. After that was that thing with Will.i.am. It was a thing for American Idol for this movie Rio. Mm-hmm. A Brazilian movie. So yeah, I did that. And that was interesting to me because it was Will.i.am and then who's the other guy? Oh man. Anyway, another artist I'm forgetting right now. But what was interesting is like, you know, I learned everything I had to learn, obviously, and when I got there. Mm-hmm. And then we get to the studios and the two singers, they didn't know any of the lyrics. It was very like it opened, I didn't know, I was surprised. That's all I can say. And anyway, it was a good experience to get to do that. And after that, what was after that, Rich? I don't know.
Well, some of the other people I read that you worked with was somebody actually that I've worked with, which is Ellis Hall, which is, for those of you who don't know who Ellis is, he's a phenomenal talent here in Los Angeles, amazing R&B singer, keyboard player, just extraordinary. Then you worked with this Persian artist named Gugush, which I wasn't familiar with for when I first read that. But
yeah,
I think that's
I got into that scene for a few years actually, the Persian scene, and somehow got called by this guy who's like I don't know, he does a bunch of like Persian weddings and events, right?
Right.
And it was through that I started to get like these different gigs from. Like different Persian artists, honestly, like touring gigs. And that was different. That was interesting.
Well, talk about a whole different feel too. I mean, talk about,
woo!
I mean, going from Brazilian feel, you know, and then you're playing pop music and then talk a little bit about playing Persian music. A lot of odd meter stuff, right?
There's a lot of odd meters, but it's also like, and like anything in music, but I feel like they're extra stickler about the feel.
Yeah.
I mean, I get it. All music, you have to have good feel. But I just feel like in that community especially, it's like, it's kind of like barked at you if it's not correct. They're really like strict about it. There was one gig I want to tell y'all. This is cool. I mean, it's not cool. It's interesting. So I'm on this tour with this artist named Binny Amin, I believe his name was. Binny Amin. He's huge. But we go to Houston to play. And it's like, you know, like an arena thing. And you know how they have all the concessions outside, not inside, you know what I mean?
Yep.
Okay. So say this showtime was 7. All right. So 7:15, 7:20, 7:30. Like, what is happening? Why aren't we playing? It turned out that somebody tried to sell beer inside of the venue. And in their culture, that can't happen.
Oh.
So they didn't start the show until all of the beer or any alcohol products were outside of the venue. And the same gig finally starts the show. And we're like halfway through the gig. And the manager comes out on stage, yells in the microphone. I don't know what he yells. Like in the middle of the song, Rich. In the middle of a tune. And stops the whole show in front of thousands of people because they reopened one of the alcohol concessions.
Oh, man.
It was wild, actually. Very wild. And like the artist, you know, he's big, right? So people want to take photos or say hi. He couldn't put his arm around a girl. No way. Mm-hmm. Right. Not allowed.
Right.
It was really, yeah. Anyway, I learned a lot in that community.
Yeah. Did you enjoy playing that music?
I did.
Yeah.
I mean, it's very percussion heavy.
Yeah.
So, you know, feels good when people want a percussion. Feels nice. Yeah.
What was the drummer? Do you remember who was playing drums for you, with you?
On that one, I don't remember his name. I mean, I've done a lot of work with a drummer you might know. It's in the Persian scene, David Haddad.
I know of him. I don't know him, but yeah.
He's super, super heavy into that music and really good at it.
I used to have a very close friend who's no longer with us named Enzo Tedesco that played in that scene a lot.
I played with him too in that scene.
You did play with Enzo?
Yes, with Enzo. That's right.
Oh. Yeah.
I don't think he was on the gig I was just telling you about. No, he wasn't. I would have remembered him. But I definitely played with Enzo a handful of times in that scene.
Unbelievable drummer.
Unbelievable feel. Everything. Super calm guy. Great.
What an amazing drummer. I miss him very. I miss him a lot. Actually, when I first met Enzo, he's originally from Switzerland. He's a Swiss Italian. And when he first came, when I first met him, he was playing in L.A. with a bunch of people and then got the gig with Gino Vannelli. And I got to see him play with Gino Vannelli. And that was mind-blowing. He was really, I really miss Enzo. What a great player.
Yeah, he was awesome.
But that's really cool. You got to play with Enzo. One of my favorite drummers.
Agreed.
Yeah. So, you just mentioned American Idol. Let's talk a little bit about your American Idol experience, because you just did something, it wasn't real recently, but it was just some years ago. You were asked to go ahead, talk about that, your American Idol TV.
Yeah, I was asked to basically come play in the house band for Hollywood Week.
Right.
And Hollywood Week is insane, by the way. I mean, insane. I want to say it was 65 or 63 songs.
Right.
And what really impressed me, the musical director, Chris Pooley, he's incredible. But what really impressed me was, like, we do this rehearsal, and that was the first time for me to be in a situation like of that scale, you know? Mm-hmm. And let's say it was 65 songs. Man, on the dot. Pretty much when we were supposed to end the rehearsal, we finished like the last note of the 65th song. I don't know how he did that, but he did that. It was amazing. It was kind of incredible, actually. But yeah, so that was a very stressful gig for me. Honestly, it was hard.
Yeah.
You know, but it was, again, another great experience and great contacts, and I'm really glad I got to do it.
What was the hardest part about it?
Well, being so tired, I couldn't concentrate. Here's what happened. We finished the rehearsal at 10, had to go to this theater downtown LA to do a sound check. Sound check went way late. Long story short, I think I got home at like 2:30 or 3. And then my kid was sick. So I barely slept, maybe a half hour, because we had to be back up at the theater at 6 a.m. to start. And I just remember like trying to chug like a big coffee and stuff, trying to concentrate and focus. And it was really tough with that amount of sleep.
Oh boy.
Very tough.
Yeah.
And I put a lot of pressure on myself, you know, too. You're like, oh no, you got to do well. You have to do well. And in the meantime, like, you know, my brain is just completely fogged out.
Yeah.
So that was tough.
We're always hardest on ourselves anyway.
But yeah.
I mean, that kind of pressure with a television show and that many songs and, what a great experience, though.
Yeah, it was a really good experience. Yeah,
I remember.
Oh, and they put me too close to the drummer, right? And they were supposed to get, what is it called, that plastic shield, you know, to divide us.
Yeah.
Anyway, I guess they couldn't get one in time, and I won't forget. Like, I had to change so much of my stuff because of that on the spot while trying to read all these charts, and that, again, being new at that, that was a challenge.
I want to ask you about that, the chart thing, because since you started later in life, was the chart reading something that you picked up more from Lama, or where did you start to really learn to hone your reading chops?
Is it Lama?
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, they had us reading every day there, pretty much, over in school.
Mm-hmm. Was it a year program?
It was a year program.
I mean, that's only a year out of your life, so you must have really dove in. I mean,
I was 24/7 pretty much.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that was a point of my life when, like, the passion for percussion was so strong. Like, I was just driven and fueled by it all the time. It was awesome, really. It was awesome.
Was it mostly rhythmic reading or also melodic?
No, rhythmic. Right. It was like just, you know, following charge. And then obviously there'd be like some hits here you had to do, that kind of thing, but no melodic. Not right. for me.
Right. Right, right, right. Well,
yeah.
That was a crash course.
That was definitely a crash course. Yeah. You know who was teaching there at the time? I miss this guy too. He passed. Is Mike Shapiro.
Oh, Mike Shapiro, sure.
Dude, there was a, this is kind of cool. So I get a call from Mike Shapiro, and he was a teacher at Lama. Now I'm talking about years and years and years later, like after I'd already moved back to Rio, all that kind of stuff. I'm playing like with Clever George a lot in town. Anyhow, so I hadn't talked to Mike probably since Lama. So many years have gone by, and he calls me out of the blue and he's like, "Will, let's go get sushi." And I was like, "Mike, all right. Wow. Cool." So I go get sushi with Mike in Pasadena, and, you know, we're talking, and then he was like, "Well, I brought you here because, hold on. And he gets his phone and he calls Hussein Jiffrey.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, "All right, okay, cool." So he hung up and he goes, and I was like, "What did he say?" Because he was asking about me. Mike was asking about me. He goes, "He said the best thing he could say, period. He said you could swing." When we talk about Brazilian music. And anyway, then he was like, "Look, I can't get any, I hear nothing but great stuff about you now, Will. This is so nice. Here's what's happening." He was like, "One of the guys at Meia Noite, he's moving, so he's not going to be playing with Sergio. And Sergio likes to have two percussionists. So I'm thinking about bringing you in." And I was like, "What? Wow. All right." Never happened, but still.
Yeah.
It was a very nice compliment to get that from Mike.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah. Yeah, it was great.
Mike was a sweetheart and what a fantastic player and teacher. Yeah.
Yeah, he was really good.
Yeah.
Yeah. He would say, there's one class where, like, you know, the drummers would get all excited to, like, show them, "Oh, we've been working on the samba, Mike. We're doing the samba. We're at 120 or whatever it is." And there was this one guy that got up there to do it in the EW, and Mike didn't say anything. And the student goes, "Mike, so what'd you think?" And he just goes, "Yeah, maybe next time try to rush a little slower."
Right. That's good.
Like, damn. Yeah, that was pretty hardcore to tell a student that.
Yeah, yeah.
He was like that, though. That's funny.
All right, so listen, another style completely. Talk about The Offspring. How did that come to you?
I'll tell you how that came to me. There's a guy in town who is an incredible percussionist and drummer named Tiki Placias.
Okay.
So Tiki recorded something for them, and then they wanted to have two percussionists on this three-night stint they were doing in Orange County. And Tiki reached out to me. And so that's really how it happened. I did two gigs with Tiki, and then Tiki had to go do something else. And I got Jason Hahn to do the third night with me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really how it happened. And then after that, they started calling me to do all these acoustic gigs that they were doing for a while.
Well, you were on the road with them for a minute.
Yeah. 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 That was also great, because that was all private jets.
Yeah, that's always nice.
That was cool, man. That was very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're good guys. I really enjoyed them as people. And it was a trip for me, you know, because like the first rehearsal, they're like, "You know, I gotta keep them separated." And I'm like, "Yeah, I feel like I'm in high school in my Jeep driving to school." It was cool. It was wild. Yeah, I still talk to him. I just was texting with Dexter the other day for his birthday. Like, they're really good people.
So, what, how do you approach American punk music playing percussion? What instruments?
I don't know.
I know, but I mean,
I mean,
what instruments did you find yourself gravitating towards that fit in that style?
oh, I would just I congas,
Yeah.
bongos, the bucket shakaday.
We're going to talk about that next.
I use that a lot in The Offspring, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, and just like, colors and toys, really. It was really like a small pop setup, honestly.
Yeah.
But they, like Dexter especially, he likes percussion. And it was cool because like he really listened while he was playing to what I was doing. And I was like, all right. But yeah, I used to call, I was like, man, what I always tell them, oh, thanks for calling me to be a punk-cussionist.
A punk-cussionist. Yeah.
Yeah,
I've never heard
punk-cussion.
that. I've never heard that before.
I made it up.
I like that.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's how it came about. It came about through Tiki, actually, which I'm very grateful he did that.
But it was more of an acoustic version of Offspring, The Offspring.
Yeah, it was all acoustic
I
gigs,
see.
really.
That's cool.
They were cool. They were very cool. I
Yeah.
mean, very entertaining, funny, super funny,
Yeah.
actually. Yeah, I really enjoyed it.
All right. So you just mentioned the bucket shakaday. So before we get into that, I want to go back a little bit before that. Now you years ago came to us, and we were talking about. We talked about new instruments, and you and I have brainstormed over the years, but you had an idea. It's like, it'd really be cool if you guys could come out with a very lightweight pandero. And we had already been thinking about it too. Before you even brought it to us, we were thinking about a lightweight pandero. But you came to us with an idea and a instrument that you had got from somebody in Japan, right?
The Pandetto? Yeah.
Yeah, it was a pandero, but it was made from somebody in Japan. Isn't that right?
That's right.
And it was a
That's
very
right.
lightweight shell. And
Yes.
I'm just telling the audience here that Will basically gave us this prototype that he had from this person in Japan, and we kind of modeled our current pandero off of this instrument, which to this day our pandero is still one of the lightest panderos on the
Yep.
commercial market. And now we have an 8 and a 10 inch pandero that Will helped us with. It's a really nice instrument. It's a really
Oh
nice
yeah,
pandero.
it is.
Yeah. And
It came out really good.
it came out good. It's very lightweight. So that was our entry into Brazilian instruments for our offering as in Gombops, because we've always been more or less steeped into the Afro-Cuban world, but we are now, slowly building a little bit more into other styles. And then came the bucket shakaday. So, for those of you who don't know this instrument, it's an instrument that's modeled after an instrument in Brazil called the shakabalde, which is a bucket that is kind of a shakaday made in a bucket shape. But before we did this with Will, it hadn't been done on a commercial basis to this level from a major manufacturer. So, Will, talk a little bit about when you first saw the shakabalde in Brazil and what it is. Talk a little bit about it.
Honestly, I made the first one I saw.
Yeah.
I didn't know about this instrument. There was a luthier that I think he passed now, but he was a luthier at Maracatu Brazil, that school.
Yeah.
And like, he would make me a pandeiro or something with like different sounding jingles, something different. Like he was very good at that. So one day I was up there and we were talking about doing an instrument or trying to talk. Like my Portuguese was so bad. Anyway, so me and him drilled all the holes in the bucket and we made a shakabalde. And honestly, that was the only one that I ever saw in Brazil when I was there.
Right, but
But then
was
I came back and I get online like years later and there's people like, crushing these instruments, making them beautifully there.
Right, but you're saying before you didn't know that there was other ones there in Brazil when you and that guy did it?
No, I never saw any. I
Okay.
maybe at that time too, I also wasn't going to like pagodes and whatnot. I didn't, so I was going to different sambas, but anyway, not so much pagodes and I feel like that's a lot of times where you might see shakobalgia, or one of the more common times.
I see. Yeah, but it is an instrument that it originates from Brazil.
Yeah, it's still underground though. It's not like there's companies that really make it.
It's an underground instrument.
It's an underground instrument.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's it talk about it's a bucket with rivets, everybody. So, if you've seen the one that we make, the rivets are in position so you have space for your hands on the side. If you want to see Will play this, you can see it on our YouTube channel. There's videos of him playing it. So you came to us and we worked on this instrument that we have now.
Yeah, it came out amazing.
Yeah, it's a very cool instrument.
It's very cool. You know what? I take that back. I think there is one company now making it in Brazil. I think Contemporânea might have one if they still have it on the market.
Yeah.
But what was different that is like they make it right where they put the screws and rivets in the middle of the bucket.
Right.
So, you know what I mean? So if you're playing it like a shakedey, your hands are
You're
hitting them.
hitting the rivets, yeah.
Yeah, and it's you know a lot of ways I like to play this instrument is on a snare stand, like
Right.
with a brush. And you couldn't really do that with that one really because it would the brushes and whatnot would get stuck in the rivets.
Yeah.
It's right in the middle. The way we did ours, I love because you know the body of it pretty much is, you know, it's just a bucket. It's
Yeah.
empty.
Yeah, and it's, you know, if you look again, if you look on our YouTube channel, you see Will playing it traditionally, like a shakedey. There is one video there of him doing it there, like a shakedey. But then also he's playing a couple of tracks, couple of different feels. One's a calypso feel, and one's a funk feel, where he's got the bucket on a snare stand, playing it with a brush, and he's accompanied by the bass player and guitar player from Ozo Motley. So check those videos out. It's really cool. It shows you an alternative way to play that instrument. It's a really useful alternative instrument if you want to have a different kind of hat sound, or you know, and you can see how Will's doing it. Very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you can also with that one, I don't know if many people think about it, is like, you know, as a percussionist, obviously you use your hands a lot when we're talking like a bigger pop rig, you know? Like you can just tap it with your hand and, you know, move on to something else or make a rhythm with your hand, not which, you
Right.
know, is different than having to pick up, say, like a cachexi
Right.
and make that chick sound or something.
Right.
And that's pretty convenient.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like a one shot cachexie. You don't have to pick it up.
Exactly. There you go.
Yeah, it's cool.
Exactly right.
And it's very very useful sound. It's in a lot of different ways. And the top of it too, the smaller bass part, the bottom of it, when you flip it over, it's got a very cool metallic kind of almost kind of a metal tabla, kind of weird, cool sound that you can play with your fingertips, which is very hip.
That's right.
Yeah. Really, really versatile instrument, everybody. Check it out. You'll dig it. All right, so listen, let's get into a little bit about your current job. Will's the percussionist for Stick Figure, a very popular American reggae band. Been touring all over the world with these guys now for, it's been what, a couple of years now, right?
2 years going on the third one right now. Yep.
Yeah, talk about these guys. How they found you, and it seems like such a natural fit, but
Oh, it's
you know.
amazing. Yeah. Well, like a lot of things I've done in my career, I reached out to them. I didn't wait for the phone to ring. So I reached out actually to the drummer. And Kevin and I started talking via Instagram. And he was like, man, you should really like send your stuff over to Scott, the singer. Just send some stuff over to him and
Wait,
see what happens
did
here.
they have a percussionist yet?
No, they've
So,
never had a percussionist.
okay, so you kind of put the bug in their ear.
Yeah, well, I think they like now I know that like, you know, they had wanted a percussionist like back in the day and tried, I think, a couple guys, I believe, and didn't really work out. And then that kind of faded away. Anyway, so then I reached out and you know, just they responded, and we were supposed to do this gig that actually I'm playing February 16th. It's a festival in Long Beach called Cali Vibes. So we were supposed to play there years ago, like right before what was it? Yeah, right before the pandemic, actually. But the singer had something happen with his voice. And so, you know, he texted me. He's like, look, man, we're not going to be able to do this one. You know, my voice is shot. Like, whoa, all right. So Yeah, so that didn't happen. And then the pandemic happened. So I was almost certain that this gig is definitely not on anymore.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But I kept in touch during the pandemic by like recording percussion loops and stuff, and I'd send them to Scott, the singer. And that's kind of like how I kept in touch with him throughout that time. And he sent me a message and said, "Hey, it's time. Let's do this. Let's give it a shot." Went up to Oakland where our studio is, and that was it, actually. I mean, just haven't stopped playing with them since.
So great. Yeah.
Yeah, they're great guys. Like I feel like I really fit in, you know? And that's, I can't say that's always the case on gigs, that you feel like that. Like
Right.
you just fit in the gig. And I do with them.
So we'll tell, let's go circle back to Widespread Panic and your early influence, because wasn't there a reconnection with them and
There was.
in conjunction with Stick Figure?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, the conjunction being the fact that I was on the road with them when the percussionist called me.
Right.
So what happened is a buddy of mine, Decker Stanley, he got my bucket to one of the production people in Panic, who gave it to Sonny,
Oh,
the
okay.
percussionist. And man, he was over the moon about it. You know, he called, left me a nice voicemail, sent me video and photos of him playing it. I just saw him recently, actually, up in Napa. And Sonny is like, "Yeah, I use it all the time on sessions. He sometimes has it set up on his rig with Widespread Panic." And that was a very much so a full circle moment for me.
Yeah.
The guy who kind of like lit the fire playing my instrument. That's crazy. Very
Exactly.
cool. That's very cool.
And he has it in his setup now, I think, still.
I don't know. He might. I mean, he might not. I haven't actually looked at any videos in a long time.
I think I saw something recently where he did.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, that's
Cool.
how cool is that?
Oh, it's incredible. Just for him to get it was, you know, it was special for me. That's all. It was very special for me.
Yeah.
And now we text sometimes and we kind of keep in touch, and that's cool. That's cool.
So what's coming up with Stick Figure?
Well, February 16th, we're playing in Long Beach at a festival called Cali Vibes. We're headlining it, which is great. And then we have two shows before Cali Vibes. They're kind of like warm-up shows. We're playing two nights at the Warfield in San Francisco. So we're going to do that, and then do Cali Vibes. And then after that, we fly to Tahoe, and we're headlining a festival there as well.
Right.
That's kind of what's coming up in really soon, actually.
Beautiful. Yeah. Cool.
Yeah. And then we have a great tour this summer. Okay. That's going to happen too. A lot of incredible venues, some of them two nights in a row. It's going to be great.
Beautiful. So, Will, if you're if somebody wanted to take a lesson with you, I know that there's quite a few people in LA that have studied with you, especially studying Pandetto. If somebody wanted to take a Pandetto lesson with you, or how do they arrange that, or how do they reach you for that?
I think the best way is, and they don't have my number, obviously, just reach out via Instagram
Okay.
and just drop me an inbox and I'll happily respond and set it up for you.
Right, and you do online lessons, obviously, and
Yeah, we could do it online if they're in town. If you prefer to get together, it'd be nice,
sure, of
but you
course.
can also do it online.
Right. Cool.
Yeah, I've been teaching some guys, and one guy in Boise, Idaho, Asheville, North Carolina, doing some Zoom things with Pandero.
Right.
It works. It's not ideal. It's better to be in person, but it definitely works.
Do you have any plans to go back down to Brazil?
Yes, I think in April, actually, I'm going, taking the family down there. We're going to go to, my wife's from Brazil, So we're going to go to Manuela City, and then after that, we're going to go to Rio for about a week or two.
Nice.
And then they leave, which is great. I love my wife. They leave Rio, and I stay.
Oh.
So I can study and play, you know?
Beautiful.
I know, it's so cool.
That's great. Yeah.
Yeah.
Where is she from exactly?
She's from a state called Rio Grande do Sul. It's like the most southern state in Brazil. And she's from a small town in that state called Caxias do Sul.
Okay.
Yeah,
But
it's a very small
you
town.
guys met here though, right? You didn't meet in Brazil, or did you meet in Brazil?
No. We met here when I was
Okay.
playing a Brazilian, not a concert, but it was a show, like at a steakhouse.
Right.
I was playing this party there, and I met her that night, and it's been 18 years, actually.
It's kind of interesting that you had already been to Brazil, so that was probably fun to talk about when you first met.
Super fun.
Yeah.
She used to always tell me at the beginning of our relationship how she really felt, at home with me, like if we're driving in the car, because I was always listening to like pagode music.
Yeah.
So I really made her feel at home. I was like, cool.
Right
I
on.
love that. Yeah.
Hey, Will, thanks for doing this with us, man.
Ah, thank you, Rich. I really enjoyed this. I appreciate it very much.
Absolutely. And yeah, we'll get together soon and break bread,
Cool.
and I got to get off my butt and start learning Pandero with you.
Let's go.
Right
All
on, brother. We'll see you soon.
right, Rich.
Thank you everybody for tuning in today, and stay tuned to our social media. We'll be announcing some more episodes coming up, and as always, feel free to share, like, and subscribe our podcast. We really appreciate the support. And any questions on any of our products, just hit us up and we'd be glad to help you out. And again, thank you for being part of the GomBoss family. Take care, everybody. See you soon. Bye-bye.